Eulogy is a term that simply means good talk, and so we're going to engage in some good talk now about our brother John. And so I would invite Howard Pateman to come forward, please.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Howard Pateman. I'm Janet's middle brother of three, and I've known John for 60 plus years. He was born in Steinfeld, Ukraine, to John and Catherine Mattis on December the 29th, 1940. 3 years later, the family, mother, father, grandmother, younger brothers were forced to emigrate, traveling by horse and buggy. They tried to gain access into Canada along with hundreds of others. In 1944, they arrived in Poland, where John's dad was conscripted into the army and taken from his family. So in 1945, they were forced to travel on without the father, John's dad, and they traveled to Germany, where they stayed for a few years working on the farm. After the war ended in 1945, John's dad managed to return to the family. The journey didn't end there. They continued via train to the Dutch border. A special password was used for them to cross over to the Netherlands with help from the Dutch Red Cross and the MCC Canada, the US government, the Canadian sponsorship. They were able to make their way to Holland, then cross the English Channel to London, eventually to Southampton, where on November the 7th, 1947, they boarded the Antigua and arrived in Halifax on November the 12th, 1947, Pier 21. They took the train to Winnipeg and arrived 3 days later. By now, John was seven, spoke very little English, but he started school right away, and he picked up very, very quickly. Two more siblings were added to the family while in Canada. He spent his growing years in North Kildonan, and Janet spent hers in East Kildonan. He was very resourceful, skilled, hardworking parents, etched out a successful life for the family. By the time John was 17, he had that work ethic. Not only that, he pumped iron, wore tight t-shirts, cigarette package in his sleeve, neatly tucked, drove hot, hot cars. Janet called him a hunk. He was enough to instill fear in any father with only one daughter. Before long, he spotted the love of his life, and that was Janet. Petite, quiet, pretty. They met in 1955, married in 1960. Three children. Kellyanne. Partner Glenn. Richard. Jen, Marie, and Brent. Six grandchildren. Lisa. Partner Caleb. Sarah, partner Matt, Marla, partner Luke, Christian, partner another Caleb, Chase and Carly. He loved his family and was so proud of everyone. Watching him and Lisa at the wedding, Caleb and Lisa's last summer, was so special. He was just glowing to have so many of you around him. And that made a real, real gift for him. He loved to camp, did a lot of camping with his family, and throughout the years, they traveled many parts of Canada and the States. Dick remembers going out in the wilderness and hunting and fishing. These are special times. Janet and John are fortunate enough to travel and cruise for pleasure. John loved his dogs, was a master at training. He trained labs for hunting, sold the dogs he had trained. He also has his little Chico right up to with him today. He was a journeyman carpenter and started working with his uncle in house building. He moved on to the commercial side of building and ended his career as the superintendent of construction for Parks Department of the City of Winnipeg. Along the way, John displayed tremendous working skills. He built three beautiful homes in the Manitoba area and renovated many, many more. He built incredible detailed furnishing. He was a master carpenter in that. China cabinets for Janet Kelly, his mother. Beautiful oak chests. These are pieces of art, and John really made anything just for himself. It was always for others. Dick often said that everything he learned about construction and building was through his father, which is so, so true. John was a very honest man, smart, sincere, great, great sense of humor. He had a unique comment, and then he would smile and laugh, that chuckle of his. He had that twinkle in his eye, and that infectious laugh. His honest and sincere nature was appreciated by others and apparent to others. When he greeted you, it was all through sincerity. In 1995, John had a heart attack and was diagnosed with COPD, which forced him to retire early. After he retired, I'm sure everybody here knew he loved golf. So John decided not just to retire, but open up his own little business. And he opened up Quality Golf Works. He made excellent clubs. He had his own workshop, where Janet would find him day after day. He even built a home on the ninth hole up in the Gimli area at the golf course. And he had his little dog Riley with him, who he taught to fetch golf balls. But Riley didn't know when the game was finished or not. So he fetched golf balls. And John had buckets of them. He never had to buy another one. In 1998, John could not take the winters in Winnipeg. So after a few years of trying different areas where they might settle, they found their home in Qualicum, the Qualicum Parksville area, in 2000. And in 2007, they moved here on a permanent basis. Through his retirement, he continued to serve his community through the non-profit organizations of the Kiwanis Club, the United Church of Canada, and he's always, always been a man of deep faith. He was raised in the Mennonite community and was married in John Black Memorial Church, Winnipeg. He had been actively involved in the United Church of Canada since that time. Upon moving to Qualicum Parksville area, they found a home at St. Stephen's United Church. And John just loved going to church when he was healthy enough, but when he got weaker, Tuesday was his favorite day. His men's book study group went to eat lunch and study with John for the last few years at his home. Thank you to Dale, Ken, Bob, and Gordon, and the late Jack Wares. Also, thank you to Ken Carpenter for bringing and having lunch with John every Wednesday, and to Jim Green, his close neighbor, for bringing him the paper every day, stopping by and having a coffee. John was on the team of community meals that's when it started, and continue to go as long as his health allowed. Mark Twain once said, "The fear of death follows from the fear of life. A man who lives fully is prepared to die at any time." John lived a full life. He fought a good battle and is now at peace. Thank you.
I'd like to begin by first thanking all of you for coming here this afternoon to remember and to celebrate John's life. And certainly delighted to see all of you here, and I know that Janet and her family are thinking the same thing. So thank you. And of course to you, Jan, and family and friends, know that you have been on our minds and you have our sympathies, and know that as you assuredly have here at St. Stephen's over the months and years, in fact, been in our prayers, you will stay there. And I know there were lots of people praying for you in lots of different places. It was about 15 years ago when John and Janet first came onto our radar screen here at St. Stephen's. They arrived one day, and I can't actually tell you what day it was, but I do remember the impression I was left with, and so let me explain that. Qualicum Beach is a place that has some unique features that makes it quite an appealing place to many. It's got a beautiful setting, it's got a convenient location, generally friendly people come here. It has a peculiar charm that seems to make it a good place to visit. It's got generally good weather, I find, especially in the winter months. And if you want to be somewhere which has a fairly temperate climate but don't want to leave Canada, this is an attractive place. I would also say that it is an especially appealing place to people of a certain age. How's that for euphemism? We have lots of newly retired people here, a very well represented age group in this community. So because of that, we tend to see lots of new faces in this town. And in turn, we get to see lots of new faces in this church, which we, of course, love. But as I indicated a moment ago, I do remember something particularly about John and Janet's arrival. And the thing I remember is that while they were new to the community, it was like they'd always been here. You see, churches receive people in different ways. Sometimes even by design do they receive them in different ways. But there are indeed different ways that people are integrated into the common church life. Some people, I find, tend to or choose to kind of circle a church. And they do that for a year or two, sometimes longer. And they do that until, for whatever reason it is, they choose to commit to a more intimate relationship. Something a little more than, "Well, I really enjoyed the service, Pastor. See ya." And even then, some folks still wait for some kind of invitation to proceed, they wait for some encouragement to enter more deeply into community life. And so we have to pay attention to that kind of thing. Sometimes we get it and sometimes we don't, unfortunately, but we're all different, and some of us just have a more reserved way of entering into some sort of church affiliation. And so we, like countless other churches, we're always trying to create ways, different ways, to welcome and integrate people into the fellowship. On the other hand, there are others who just arrive and they take their place even though we haven't actually met before. They are seemingly instantly part of the fabric of our life together. And that's who John and Janet were and are. They initially arrived to winter here, and it seemed to me like they were suddenly everywhere. They just joined in, and when they moved here permanently, they were even more involved. And it's been great. So thank you for making this your church home. We are much blessed. So it worked like this. First, I met John at worship one Sunday morning. And then a little time after that, he turned up at the men's Bible study. And then shortly after that, he became part of another study group. And then he was helping out in various serving opportunities that were available around here. And of course, he never missed any of the gatherings that we have here for fun and fellowship. And the next thing you know, would you believe it, he's a trustee. And there was more, much more. And you know, as I go through that particular list, I am acutely aware that I have now just pretty much gone through the categories that are sometimes referred to as the marks of discipleship. That's a reference to the various ways that followers of Jesus grow in the faith, through worship and education and fellowship and service and much more. And I think that's how I'm going to best remember John. I'm going to remember him as a disciple. Now, I know that sometimes to our ears that can sound like a rather daunting designation, disciple. But it shouldn't be. See, disciples are not perfect. In fact, some of us are poster children for imperfection. And if you look rather closely, you will see a resemblance to that bumbling group of women and men who followed after Jesus throughout the Gospels. Disciples are complicated. Growing and imperfect and questioning and faithful in spite of their doubts, but having doubts. But they hang in there just the same. And that was my experience of John. He was someone who was simply trying to walk the walk, always trying to follow Jesus as best he could. Like you, I'm going to remember lots about John. I'm going to remember his quick, very quick sense of humor. He was lots of fun. He was fast with a laugh, and he always seemed to have a comeback. And that humor, that stayed with him right until the end, and to which I say thanks be to God. He was smart. He was curious about all sorts of different kinds of things. I found his counsel with me, to be trustworthy and true. John was a passionate guy. He had this infectious enthusiasm for life. He was inevitably positive, always looked for the best in people, and interestingly enough, that had the effect of bringing out the best in those around him. He positively shone when he was in a group. John was enormously good company. He was gregarious, and it was just good to be with him. And he was always looking for ways to be involved. He loved to be active. It's as if he decided he wasn't going to miss out on anything of which he could be a part. And so life was so precious that it should not be lived passively. And I'll remember him as someone who was honest and genuine, someone with loads of compassion. He cared about people a lot. He was honestly interested in who you were. And so to say what I hope is absolutely obvious at this point, like you, I'm going to miss him. The other day when Jan and I were talking about how we might order things today, she passed me one of John's Bibles. And the first thing I noted, that it was actually in exactly the right condition for a Bible. It was starting to wear out. It was filled with underlining and crammed with notes and affirmations and bulletins and reminders and all sorts of things written on little scraps of paper, some of which I still don't really understand. But they were statements and scriptures. Well, Bibles, after all, are meant to be read. And they're meant to challenge us, to be questioned, to be researched. And John showed all the appropriate signs of having done those things. It was very, very well used. And that's because the scriptures meant a lot to John. And those scriptures that we've heard today, those are all ones that he chose. And I think his choices reveal to us something about him. The first text we heard was Psalm number 121. It begins with that famous question, I lift up my eyes to the hills, from where does my help come? And then the psalmist answers his own question. He says, my help comes from the Lord. It's this affirmation. He's affirming the faithfulness of God, even in the face of trial and difficulty. It reveals this firm confidence and ultimate trust in God by the psalm's author. So where does my help come from? It comes from God. And God will watch over me forever. That's what he's saying. That is the faith that I saw in John. Someone with a great confidence in God, even in the face of real difficulty. You know, God was working things out. God was moving this project along. I might not fully understand, but I know I can trust God. That's what I heard in John. And then there's the other psalm, Psalm number 51. Now, we only heard a few verses, but the whole of Psalm 51 is... It's a good read. It's stark. It's raw. Some have suggested that King David actually wrote this after he was dramatically confronted by his rather cataclysmic and really difficult sin and failing. He was confronted by the prophet Nathan. And those specific verses today, verses 10 through 12, they reflect someone who's now cut through all the pretense. There's no more kidding yourself that you got life all tied up in a bow. Instead, it's a confession. It's a confession that we can't do it on our own. That we really need help. So create in me a clean heart, O God. I really can't work this out without you. Get me back on track. Help me align my life with your purposes. I saw that in John. John clearly sought to live a faithful life. But he didn't seem to be especially surprised that this was no small task, that it was a struggle. He knew that we all slip and we fail regularly. But in the end, he had no doubt that he really did need to rely on not his own power and strength, but on the glorious grace of God. See, I think I found John to be someone who was literally shaking his head in amazement regularly at God's grace. And then there's our third text from John's Gospel. These are the opening verses of what's Jesus' fairly lengthy farewell speech. It takes place just before his arrest and trial. And he's trying to prepare his friends for his departure. And so he's trying to make sure they're as ready as can be for what's coming. And so he opens with some words of reassurance. He says, you know, you don't need to be worried. You can trust God. You can trust me. And then he offers those famous lines. You know, there's lots of room for you in my Father's house. I've told you this. You believe me, don't you? And in fact, I'm on my way to get the place ready for you. It sometimes seems as if some of my Christian sisters and brothers are simply trying to put in time here on earth so that they can get to their heavenly reward. But it was never actually my impression with John that way, no. Because he enjoyed life so enormously. He loved his family. He enjoyed creation. He treasured his friendships. He relished being active and involved in the stuff of life. Because life was to be lived. But he also had a confidence that this wasn't all there is. There was much, much more awaiting us. And it was pretty clear at the end that there was actually some anticipation that he was on the brink of something good and something kind of wonderful. And that gave him a remarkable confidence, a palpable peace, even what was the storm of the end of life. And it was an impressive thing to behold. You know, John Wesley once declared, our people die well. Yeah. And that brings me back to John's Bible. As I said, it was filled with notes and observations and affirmations. And I went through all those little slips of paper, and there were lots of them. But one particular one caught my eye. On it is written the following. When my life here is over, I pray that I have fought the good fight, I have finished the race, I have kept the faith. Man, I like that. That's a quote from 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 7. It's part of Paul's letter to his young friend and his co-worker, Timothy. And some believe that Paul wrote this at the end of his life as he was reflecting back on all that had happened to him and all his work, all his accomplishments, all his failures. He'd fought the good fight. He'd finished the race. He kept the faith. So you know my impression? John, you did. You did. And so we are giving thanks to God this afternoon. For all that was good and kind and loving in John's life, we give thanks. For the hope that was in him, the hope and the trust that he had a future where he would finally breathe easy again. For that we also give thanks. And for the hope that we have, that John didn't just cease to be last Sunday, but that he lives on in the heart of God, and that we will actually get to see him once again. For that too we give thanks. And until that time, fight the good fight. Finish the race. Keep the faith. Amen? Amen. Amen.